Welcome back to the Unanimous Decision Podcast. I'm your host, D-Palm. Follow me on Twitter at D-Palm66. Follow the show on Twitter at UDPod. Follow the entire MTR Network at the MTR Network. You found us, don't lose us. Subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, everywhere podcasts are given away for absolutely free. Those five-star reviews have your words read on the air. We're back. More Last Dance, more Michael Jordan. And today, our guests. So for those of you who are new, every Tuesday, going through this Last Dance kind of five-week series, I've had someone on who knows how much I love this, love basketball, and was kind of around and formative for these basketball loving years. And today I have the person who brought me basketball, who showed me what basketball could be, who brought it into my life. I've got my dad. He's on every year, Labor Day weekend, but special appearance. Talking Jordan. How you doing, Dad?
Oh, all is good. All is well. Quarantine Central is a good place.
You've been locked down for a while, huh?
Yeah, about 91 days.
Well, I wasn't taking any chances, and you and I had that conversation. Hey,
I appreciate it. Thank you. Right.
All right. So we're going to talk about the Bulls, talk about 7 and 8, but I want to talk to you kind of about what the Bulls mean kind of from your perspective, because you're from Gary, Indiana, local teams, the Bulls. And I got to say, as an adult now, it's more interesting to me to ask, what was your appreciation for this team as it was happening? Because this isn't the team, this isn't one of those things where you fall in love in your youth or something that was defined you in your 20s. But at the time the Bulls are happening, you're a real adult with like a life, and sports take a different meaning at that point. What was it like seeing the hometown team become this global phenomenon?
It was a fantastic time for people from the region up there, watching them come into their own from the time Michael came on the scene until they went into their championship mode was kind of good to see, because I'd always grown up being a Bulls fan as a young man in the area. So it was kind of exciting watching it all come to fruition.
And it's wild because you think pre-Jordan, it's what, Jerry Sloan and like the tail end of George Gervin?
Right. Back in those days, those were the old Bulls from the way back days, and they were an average team.
Right. And so this isn't even like, oh, I'm from Atlanta and the Braves were good for a while. This is an average team turned into the Beatles. Like, you see this footage of them and even the tour they did in France before the 98 season, where they can't move. They can't even breathe, really. And it's one thing to say, oh, yeah, Mike, the team of the hometown I'm from got good. It's another thing to say they changed the world, which is weird to say, but they really did.
And also keep in mind that the NBA was changing as well. I mean, when Michael came in, the NBA it was tape replays. Magic and Bird were trying to bring it up by the bootstraps, so to speak. And at that time, the only, for a team sport, the only individual making big money at that time was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who had the first shoe contract.
Right.
So to watch Michael come in, deal with the first several years as the old head sort of evaluated, moved on out, and he became the controller of the team. It was an exciting time to watch that all take place.
All right, so the episode 7 and 8, actually before we get to 7 and 8. So this has been a lot of people's like first introduction into the foray of Michael Jordan, the man. And one of the things you always impressed upon me was, I tell you some story about Michael Jordan or some story about some athlete, you tell me like, well, what about this? And you make me think about kind of what, I was never raised one to be a hero worshiper as far as like a sports icon. Like, oh, I love Michael Jordan the player, but he's not a hero.
Right.
It's interesting to me to watch people kind of realize that Michael Jordan, so we covered this on the podcast that went up earlier this week. After bad games, he wouldn't let Horace Grant eat.
Well, here again, now let's look at the whole thing now. The Bulls as a team, even as they started to win their first three championships, weren't the most power-laden team in the NBA. You had the Celtics, you had the LA Lakers, you had several teams that had ultimately a lot more Hall of Famers than the Bulls did. Mm-hmm. So what apparently, my view of the situation even then, and looking back at it now, is that you had to make everybody on the team down to the 15th person 100% of what they could be.
Right.
And it wasn't easy for a lot of those guys to come up to that, because at that time, I guess this 90, I guess it's 95, 96, 97, you had to motivate people to get out and do it, because that was big money. I mean, you could sit on the bench and have a good life.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about the Jordan myth making, the fingerprints of a Michael Jordan production that kind of seemed to appear in eight. Seven, sure. They talk about Jordan's retirement, and he lost his father and all the pressure, and he'd been talking for years about, you know, man, I can just leave this all behind. I don't need this anymore. And I thought it was super interesting, because it's one of those things that's become kind of the topic du jour of, like, NBA players discussing how unhappy some of them actually are and kind of the lack of fulfillment. Like, you look at someone like a Kevin Durant. I'm reading The Victory Machine by Ethan Strauss, and just fascinating to see how they realize that winning doesn't correlate to happy. And I think it's very interesting to look back now and see, like, yeah, I'll always have my theory as to why Michael Jordan went away for almost exactly 18 months. I'll always have a theory about that.
Right. Well, that's fair. I mean, that's a fair.
I can also
that's
respect that, like, the pressure that he was under is something no one can even fathom.
Well, if you think about it, now, like I said, before him, there was only Wilt with a shoe contract. He got his first shoe contract. And if you think about it, how he grew up, he played in Converses. His coach was a big supporter of Adidas, and he ends up at Nike taking a flat payment plus a percentage, and that was the first time that ever happened. And now remember, now we're talking, he's 30 years old now. He's won three championships. Mm-hmm. He'd even mentioned going to play baseball before his dad passed.
Right.
He had that out there for a while, because three championships in a row at that time, you're 30 years old, you know, I'm invincible. What more is there to prove, especially if you can't control the cast of characters around you?
So you think that's one of the first times that it's a public refutation of Krause?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
What I think it's super interesting, I think I could talk to you about this more than any other people. Everyone's painting Jerry Krause in this, you know, in a certain light, which is fair. And I think, you know, you look at the decisions that are made. Jerry Reinsdorf is super cheap. The 94 baseball strike occurs because Jerry Reinsdorf is like, oh, then we're just not going to play.
Oh, Krause did nothing without Reinsdorf's approval.
Exactly. And I know you've got to do certain things when you're filming this, because Reinsdorf is here and he's giving you all this access. And so, yes, you're going to paint him in a certain light, but you're very – thank you.
Let's be real. At this time, Reinsdorf owned the White Sox and he owned
exactly,
the Bulls.
Which is how he got around paying Jordan all that money to play baseball.
Right. So let's you know, Krause was the hatchet man, but the hatchet holder was Reinsdorf. Let there be no doubt.
Jordan leaves basketball behind, still to this day unfathomable. Like, I understand people want to put in the context how hard these seasons are. And I get that, but, like, he took a 2-year break. He took a page vacation to play to chase his childhood dream, and he chased it pretty well. Ended up hitting 202, ended up hitting 220 before the baseball strike came to an end. Do you remember? Did you ever take it seriously, or were you one of the skeptics, or was it somewhere in between?
I took it serious that he was going to go play baseball. I did never take it serious that he wasn't coming back to basketball.
Hmm.
Because if you think about it, back in 97, he was making more money outside of basketball than in basketball. He was with Coca-Cola, Chevrolet, Gatorade,
oh, yeah.
Ballpark,
oh, yeah.
Franks.
It's one of the open dirty secrets of the NBA. LeBron's changed teams three times. No, he's not. He's always worked for Nike.
True. No, he
and
didn't
it's like,
change.
Well, that's not who he plays for.
Different
the person
place.
Who gives him the most money is his chief employer.
Right. Right. So with all that being said, I knew that, well, we all grieve differently, and his
right.
relationship with his dad, you know, his dad was a before Michael and his brother and kids got raised, he was a pretty hard-nosed sharecropper back in North Carolina now, and they was all about that money, him and his wife. So they understood the value of, hey, making sure you got yourself and your family taken care of. So I knew, I took the retirement serious to the point that he wanted to go try baseball. Would he ever go back to basketball? I always thought so, only because of the talent and the access to additional money that he could make with basketball, that it would take him years and more years to get up to in baseball.
Right. And also, baseball even then wasn't in the business of making stars.
No.
You come in to make money, but you want to be a star, you want to like command industry, go be Michael Jordan. And that's exactly what he did, because while he wasn't there, the Bulls are still very good. The Bulls make it deep into the playoffs, and I didn't know if they were going to cover it, but the Pippen game where he refused to go back in for that last shot that's drawn up for Tony. And it is none of us are our worst or smallest moments. But for me, that's one of those stories that I used to separate people in the conversation talking about the NBA from a star to a superstar.
But stars here again, I think
stars matter, the shots that turn up for him. The superstar changes the play.
That plus it was a lot else going on with Pippen at the time about his money, about the team,
about Tony.
About Tony as well. I mean, Tony was going to be the great white hope coming to the Bulls, and everybody in Chicago was aware that part of the plan theoretically was to replace Scotty with Kukoc,
which is why they destroyed him in the Olympic game.
Yes. Oh yes.
Tony, I don't even know these dudes. Why are they so mad at me?
Well, Reinsdorf and they set him up. You know.
Yeah, they did. They really did. But Tony takes that shot.
Even in the part in the documentary when Krause talks about the number 7 and how popular it was in Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm on the team, I'm sitting there saying, wait a minute, man. I don't block you three championships.
I gotta go in here. I gotta work here.
You haven't paid me what I'm worth.
Mm-hmm.
And now we get down to the last 14 seconds and you're gonna tell me that to go in and feed the ball to Kukoc? No, I'm gonna sit right here on this bench.
Oh man. So yeah, he sits down, takes a shot, Tony hits it. He apologizes to the team. There's apparently tears. Bill Winnington gave a great speech. And they come back and they do it again. And I think that when he decides to come back with the facts, it's great. It's a great story. And when they lose to the Magic, it's played up in the doc. And one of the first times you feel that Michael Jordan production, because he wasn't in basketball shape. That team was not beating that Magic team.
No.
He put 93. One of those teams had Horace Grant and Shaquille O'Neal, and the other one didn't.
Well, here again, let me go back just a second. I know you got a time, you got a clock running over there, but when Michael wasn't there, the Bulls still put three guys on the All-Star team.
Correct.
Pippen, Grant, and Armstrong made the All-Star team in 94. Scottie's overall point production when Michael was out went up by only 1 point. Point per game. So when Michael comes back, you know, the rest of the team was almost settled into being quote unquote mediocre.
Right. Right.
Because like I said, when you looked at the Bulls talent-wise, benched from top to bottom over those years that Michael was there, they didn't have the greatest teams. There were other teams out there that had better quote unquote players.
It's interesting that you say that, because I was thinking about this and going back. I think a lot of this, particularly the second three-peat, and we'll talk about that in a second, becomes, I mean, you look at it through like a more historical lens, because you say, well, what changed? They moved the three-point line in, and they added two more teams.
Yes.
So now, dilution of talent, there. You got to look at it this way. John Stockton and Karl Malone have been together for 15 years at this point.
Right.
They won low 50s games the year before expansion. The next year, they won 62. I'm not saying time made them better. I'm saying that there is a market inefficiency that I think Jordan looked back and said, this league's expanding. I won't need that much to win these titles. I can go peel off some championships.
Right.
I think he did that calculus. Right. And said, look, this is when they added the Raptors and the Grizzlies.
Yep.
So there's expansion draft. There's dilution in the league. And Jordan said, I can steal two or three back. And that's exactly what he did. He comes back in 8, and we get Space Jam. When we talk about Space Jam, you know, I'll remember Space Jam.
I'm sure you do.
Feel Space Jam in my bones. It's another thing I've talked about. They used to have inside the NBA show after Saturday morning cartoons. Between that and Space Jam, they brainwashed an entire generation to love the basketball, and in particular, Michael Jordan.
Right.
But then you get to hear about the workout regimen he's doing. He's got a bubble they built to play basketball. People are flying into LA, a tradition that still continues in the summers. Those LA pickup games are famous at UCLA, at USC.
USC, yeah.
And so, anyway,
and just for Michael, just to be totally honest, they mentioned it in the documentary. It was a scouting event for him. He wanted to know who was in the league and who are these young guys and what are their strengths and weaknesses.
Yep. And I like before that, even when he comes back and he loses that the Magic series, you get this beautiful statement. I didn't want to come back, and you know, I want to. There's none of my father never see me. And da, 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 da. Nick Anderson said one fucking thing. All that shit was out the window.
23 is not 45. 45 is not 23, huh?
He gave this heart beautiful speech about why he's wearing 45, and Nick Anderson said one thing. And that's what I love about 8, because 8 gives you that picture of Jordan that I think is the most incomplete of the doc, because you get the Scott Burrells and the Steve Kerr stories where he used tough love and they became friends.
Right.
It did not work all the time. It went wrong often. We lionize these versions of these stories because Jordan's a producer. And it's got to fit a certain story, and he's the hero. I get it, but it's so interesting because we know the stories of guys who were literally destroyed because you can't lead everyone the same way. And it's one of those things that, because he's Jordan and because it's his doc, we roll with it. But I'm watching when he said that he punched Steve Kerr. First of all, I love the fact that they all talk about Steve Kerr at him first.
All right.
Because he pushed Kerr far enough. And the visual of Michael Jordan punching Steve Kerr in the face will never not be funny to me. One.
Well, here again, Steve Kerr had gotten enough and already punched him in the chest before that happened.
Oh, for sure.
And even more than that, Phil, the coach, was just trying to nitpick Michael against. And at some point, Michael just said, "Hey, man, this is enough of this."
But I just think it's, and I thought it was very interesting to watch him get almost emotional at the end of 7 talking about his desire to win. What was interesting about that was I listened to a podcast with the director. That's the first 45 minutes of their first conversation.
Is a desire to win.
Is him calling for the break. He said he had 11 pages of notes for the first day, and that was on page 2. Was the question about being a good teammate, but the idea that people don't see him as a nice guy. And you can watch, I love the speech at the end of 7 because you can watch the competitiveness rising as he's not even being angry or loud. He's just trying to elucidate how he views the world.
Right.
And it's so singular and so powerful that's, and for the people who are in the camp of he's the greatest player of all time, that's the difference. And I think LeBron found a new way to do what Jordan did, like spending all that money on his body with like the chambers and the different workouts. I think that's a different mode of this.
But it's the same kind of commitment, though.
It's the same level of commitment.
It's the same. And the same thing with Kobe.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kobe was also doing and watching this, it's even more clear. I think Kobe would tell you. Would have told you he was just doing Michael Jordan, like even all the Mamba stuff.
Right.
That's just him verbalizing the stuff Jordan never talked about.
No, he just did.
He's saying the stuff that Kobe's, the stuff you're hearing in his doc, the stuff Kobe's been walking around telling people for 10 years. We just realized that he told us that in the documentary. Like, if you see it from me, it came from him.
It's a fascinating series. I'm just glad to be able to see it because it's a good one.
It really is. They win the quote unquote greatest team of all time, 72-10. They blow past the Magic, the Gary Payton, the Sonics. His level of derision for Gary Payton, where he sees Gary talk all that shit and just laughs at him. Whew.
Well, you got to believe. Now, Gary mentioned that he was a defensive player of the year, but by that time, Michael had 3 or 4 defensive players of the year. So, and I was surprised on how they shot the one particular scene. It made it seem like Payton was the same height as Jordan, and he wasn't.
No, he wasn't.
At one point, it looked like they're looking eyeball eyeball. I'm going, that's not true.
But I like that Jordan's on. He's like, look, man, y'all can say you work me if you want to, but I was going through a lot of shit right then.
Oh, yeah.
The glove. I love it when he says the glove, like the glove. So, oh, it's also like you think back right now, this is during a very low point of point guard play in the league. KJ's done. Keaton Marbury aren't there yet. Iverson is getting started. Isaiah's done. Magic's done. So we're like, Steve Kerr is the starting point guard for the Bulls.
Yeah, that's where it got.
That's where guard play is right now. Like in the NBA. Right. But John Stockton, who I don't want to call them very 2020 Rockets-esque, but it's one of those things where you've run a pick and roll for 15 years. And yes, you're gonna win a bunch of regular season games. And yes, you're gonna do very well in the playoffs, but you're never gonna win a title that way. It's the same way I feel watching James Harden.
Okay.
And for me, you know what? Honestly, the Jazz is the first team I ever hated.
Do you know why you hated
it? I hated watching them play.
Why?
I found it because they played that I didn't like Carmelo. I like Carmelo's game.
They played Jerry Sloan basketball.
They did.
original Chicago Bull basketball.
Jim and Jordan. They forced my hand, Pops.
Right.
I love that they let BJ Armstrong tell his story about Jordan getting mad at him. Oh,
awesome story.
I think
BJ was one of the stars of Series 8.
Oh yeah, for sure. It was great because. And it reminds me that everyone in the league has a Jordan story. Like, they used to tell rookies when they came in, don't look him in the eye. Don't talk to him. Don't tap him up. Do not look directly. Because the last thing you wanted to do was to take this business meeting and make this shit personal. And all Jordan needed was an inch.
And of course, we all know in retrospect, he would create shit to make it personal.
Him admitting he made up that fucking quote.
Yeah, nice game, Mike. Said, no, he never said it. Or Carl walks past him at dinner and he doesn't speak. I'm going, oh, okay, so this is it. Whatever it took to put that jet fuel in that engine, he either created it, made it happen, or whatever. He wanted that extra drop of jet fuel.
And if you believe it, isn't it true?
Yes. Oh,
if you believe it that hard, isn't it true?
If you believe it hard enough, it's true. To you, if to nobody else.
Pops, thank you so much for coming on. I really do appreciate it. I can't wait for episode for 9 and 10. They haven't even – so they picture locked 9, I think, middle of last week.
Okay.
When I listened to the podcast of the director, he said they had not finished 10 yet and that he would not answer if there was going to be an 11 bonus episode.
My only concern is how far do you go with this? Do you go into him going to Washington?
I think the focus is
I think it's got to end with his basketball career in Chicago is what I think.
Yeah. Oh, no, the documentary is about the 98 team.
Oh, okay.
That's going to be our end point. But I think if you could do a post-retirement or a more reflective episode 11, I hope they tell the story in 10. How about that?
Okay. Yeah. That'd be good.
The story of this team ends in 10. If 11 something else, that's fine. It'll be what it is. But I'm very excited to have Susan on next week because I've talked about it. She had no frame of reference for Michael Jordan before this.
Well, she's probably having a wonderful time going down.
You know my wife very well. She's like, Michael Jordan's the greatest thing that's ever happened. How am I just now finding out about this man? This is how I should live my life. And I'm like, I pity her employees when she has to get to work on Monday after watching that Sunday night.
Oh, okay. She's going to have a ball next week then because she's had a rude awakening over the last several weeks.
Oh, not rude. She's loved every second of it. She wants more. She could go for 10 more weeks, all she could care. But Dad, thank you for coming on.
One last thing before you get away. I saw you posted last week when you started watching this series that you bought your first pair of Air Jordans. Just for the record, you had a pair of Air Jordans at 18 months. I'll just leave it at that.
So here's the story I told the last Essays podcast.
But that's the first pair. Wait a minute. That's the first pair you bought.
Let me tell you this story. I came over for Mother's Day, dropped lunch off, socially distant. And as we're driving away, my mother calls me and says, by the way, your first pair of Jordans were actually that pair at 18 months. I said, Mother, those do not count. Stop doing that. So, yes, my mother called me just to hit me with a well, actually.
No, she did.
Yes, she did. On Mother's Day. And there's a more on-brand story. I don't know it. Thank you guys for listening. That's your show. This is your outro. See you guys next week.